It's a pleasure to be able to talk a little bit about things in Brazil. As I've had opportunity to visit here over the years, we've talked about a lot of the different aspects of the work, but some of you may not have been here, and so I'm going to very quickly review a few things in general, and then I want to talk a little bit more about some of the more recent things. As far as just background, I'll throw it all up here at one time, background as far as the country is concerned. Brazil is a nation of about 200 million people in a land area a little larger than the 48 U.S. states, the contiguous states. Obviously, being a country that extends from north of the equator to well below the tropics, it has very diverse climate and a lot of cultural differences, even from one region to another. Over the years, we have seen, 21 years that we've lived there now, generally the economy has improved over those years, probably not nearly as much as it could have, but in general, Brazilians are somewhat more prosperous than they were when we first got down there 21 years ago. That's not necessarily a good thing. That's a fact that I'm just trying to pass on. As far as religion is concerned, the primary religious influences in Brazil are Catholicism, not as big as it used to be. When I first started researching Brazil and getting ready to go down there in the late 80s and early 90s, statistics showed about 90% Catholic. That number is probably below 70% now. And many of those people have left the Catholic Church, and many of them go into evangelical groups, especially the neo-Pentecostal groups, the health and wealth gospel being preached in many of those groups. And so much of what we have to deal with are people that have already left the Catholic Church and are working through, maybe still seeking, when we get the opportunity to be able to study with them. Another aspect of that, as far as the work that we've been involved in down there, the North American participation in that work, there have been several different men who have lived there for a time. Right now, the only other North American that's participating with us in that work is Carl Ballard, who lives about 600 miles south of us in Porto Alegre. And Carl married a Brazilian woman, and they lived for a while in Brazil, came back to the States for a while, but have been back in Brazil for about the last 3 years. And then, of course, participation of those who are not in Brazil. The congregation here has helped in my support since before I ever went to Brazil. Like, I believe we go back to 1984. I think it's been 30 years now that the congregation here has been helping in my support in other areas that I was in the upper Midwest before moving to Brazil. As far as Brazilian participation, there is a growing number of congregations. Most of the congregations that I'll refer to are ones that we've helped start over the years. Right now, about 30 scattered out throughout the country. A higher concentration of those in the São Paulo city area and the state of São Paulo. But that kind of makes sense because one out of every five Brazilians lives in the state of São Paulo. It is by far the largest state. Approximately 40 million people in the state of São Paulo, and about 20 million of those in the area, the metropolitan area of the city, which is where we live. There are a few Brazilian preachers being supported by Brazilian churches. We've never sought American support for these brethren, but have encouraged the Brazilian churches to be involved in that and to support them. And since there's only a handful of preachers working among a number of congregations, that means that in most churches, all the work is done by men who also have other responsibilities, who work other jobs to support their families, who do not receive any support, financial support for what they're doing. But they do the teaching, do the preaching, deal with the different necessities of the congregation, and they do the best they can. And I think that is a thing for us to remember, that when we have to, we usually learn how to. And that's been exactly the case in many of the situations, many of the congregations in Brazil. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about how we get some of our best contacts. If you were to move to a country where you barely spoke the language and didn't know hardly anybody, you would have to work to find people to teach in what we'd refer to as cold contacts. People you don't know. People that you're going to try to meet somewhere. Encourage them to come to a Bible study or to do a correspondence course or something so that you can get that initial contact with them. In our early time in Brazil, that meant a lot of flyers being handed out on the street. Sometimes ask Greg how many hundreds of thousands maybe he handed out while he was down there. And I meant a lot of work trying to get out, and we still do a lot of that. I've lost count a long time ago, but we are talking about millions of pieces of paper that have been distributed, tracts and flyers and invitations to Bible studies that have been given out all throughout the country. And Brazilian brethren have gotten into that and participated in that. And many times they have paid expenses for some of those things to be handed out. So somebody that's frustrated, maybe frustrated with some of the doctrines that are being taught in the church that they're in, or some of the practices that they just don't quite understand how that can be. They don't know how to answer it, but it bothers them. Or maybe they're passing through a difficult time in their own lives, and they're frustrated in dealing with that in their own lives. That's when people generally are most susceptible. And so what will happen in that situation is maybe that person receives a flyer or an article that somebody hands him. And it might have on the bottom of it, practically everything we print has this on it, the address of our website of Bible studies. Or perhaps the person doesn't even receive a piece of paper. He starts out by doing a Google search. And he's looking for something. One of the most common words that brings people to our website is the word tithing. Because they're in churches many times that are telling them they must tithe and they must give extra offerings, and then God will bless them materially. And so they start to search for that, and they get onto Google and they put in the word tithing, and it brings them to our website. Because we have been accumulating material for almost 20 years on that website, it now has thousands of articles, hundreds of audios, and nearly 100 videos. And what that means is there's a lot of material there to show up on a Google search. And so many times, if somebody's studying, researching on the internet about anything related to the Bible, it's very likely that something from our website will be amongst the first listings they'll see when they do that Google search. Any of you that have worked with internet websites knows how important it is to be in that top part of the page on a search. And so that brings in the contacts many times. But that only gets them to the website. That doesn't get them in contact directly with us. That's an anonymous thing. Just like you can go on a website and get news or get sports information. Nobody knows your name. Nobody knows your email. At least I don't think they get all that figured out from just getting on the site. We don't. So we have to wait until this person decides to make contact with us. So he might send a letter. He might send an email. Or he might show up at a public study that we do somewhere. And I'll explain a little bit about those in a moment. That's when we're able to have the direct contact with these people and to be able to start working with teaching them directly. And some of them come to the point of obeying the gospel. And sometimes that means getting two or more together in some town and the start of a new congregation. And that's been what's been going on and what continues to go on. And it's the reason that I never get up in the morning wondering if I'll find something to do that day or wondering if there's somebody that I could teach. I know there are people out there. It's a matter of figuring out which ones need to be prioritized to try to do the best we can to reach them. As far as the contacts themselves, I wanted to comment a little bit about some of the primary sources of the contacts that we get. In any place, the best contacts are going to be the personal contacts. Best contacts are going to be the people that you know. And the people that usually are the most effective at reaching those contacts are new converts. Because new converts want to tell their family, they want to tell their neighbors, they want to tell their coworkers. They may not know how to give a Bible class, they may not know how to explain everything, but they want to tell what they know. And many times, if we can work together with that new convert, couple that person with someone else who's more capable of doing the teaching, he'll bring the contacts, and we just have to work with trying to teach those people. There's a brother in Manaus who, the first time I'd met him, when we did some public studies, he started studying with brethren, was baptized a few weeks later. I went back to Manaus a couple months later. He invited people into a study in his house that had several times more people than the public studies that we were doing that we'd been announcing to everybody else. Personal contacts. And we want to get to those people. But many times we have to work with trying to find people that we don't know. And that's where printed materials, bulletins, tracts, flyers, whatever we are able to get out there to people can help. We've also, for the last 3 years, been making use of newspaper articles. And this was a new opportunity that came up 3 years ago. There's a man in southern Brazil, his name is Lauro. Lauro was in a denomination, was frustrated by some of the things that were being practiced, started looking for something on the internet, he found our website, and he literally stayed up all night watching videos and looking at the articles that were related to them the first night that he found it. That's how he got started. And he went on studying. Not too long after, got in contact with us, made a trip to another city to participate in some public studies, and about midnight that night, he and his wife were both baptized. So they went back to this town, just the two of them, back to this town. Lauru runs an auto repair shop, and therefore he knows a lot of the people in town, including he knew one of the newspaper editors. And so one day when the newspaper editor was in there to get his car fixed, Lauru said, "You know, I got an idea for a column for your newspaper. How about a column that's called, 'What Does the Bible Say?'" And he said, "And I know somebody who could write it." And he gave him the address for our website and said, "Look at some of the stuff this guy's been writing and see what you think." So not very long after, I got an email from the editor of the newspaper saying he was interested in the idea. And so we discussed how it was going to be done. And since that, I've been writing two columns a week that fill it's a tabloid-sized newspaper, but one column, basically half a page, twice a week, in a newspaper that goes out to about 40 little towns down in the southern part of Brazil, reaching people that we probably wouldn't have gotten to in other ways. Now, what results will come from that, God knows, because what happens is these people may get onto our website. We never know how they got there, but it may be often that was what brought them to the website, and then they start studying and later come in contact with us. So that's been one additional thing. But by far the most effective tool we've had in reaching to people that we don't know has been the internet, and specifically website, videos embedded into that using YouTube, then other means, social media, Facebook and things, to kind of scatter it around and get people looking at it to draw them in. And so I want to tell you a little bit about what's been happening with that. Somebody asked me before I got here if the website's continuing to get a lot of activity. Well, let me tell you a little bit about it. First of all, the videos. We do our videos through YouTube, but we embed them in our site and we advertise them through our site, because if you go directly to YouTube to watch a video, you know what happens when you get to the end of a video. They throw up a number of suggestions that they think are appropriate and that sometimes are not at all what you want people to be looking at. So when we embed it on our site, if they come to the site to see it, what they're going to see around it are other videos of ours rather than being taken away to something else. They can still go to YouTube and they can see it there. And so the statistics we get on the videos come through YouTube. The numbers are probably too small to see very clearly here. This is the month of August. We had 30,666 video views in the month of August. And of those, it gives an estimated time. The people were watching our videos 183,000 minutes in the month of August. I think that works out to about four people watching around the clock throughout the entire month. That's teaching reaching out to people that we would not be able to reach out to. When we went to Brazil, we hardly knew what the internet was. And to imagine that we would be able to prepare a video message that could be seen by over 100,000 people. This does not show up for you all back there, but two of our videos have already been seen by more than 100,000 people. And so this is getting out to people that we would otherwise not be able to teach and not be able to preach. When you prepare a sermon, where I worship, we have about 80, 90 people. You prepare a sermon, you preach it for 80 or 90 people. But if you can put a message in this context, that same message may get out to literally hundreds of thousands of people. And that's what's been happening with the videos. And the broader website, and this would include all of the articles and the other things that we have on there, the statistic that to me seems most interesting is to look at the number of visits. And again, I didn't have a way to blow this up the way I wanted it to be, but the number of visits that come in during 1 month to the website is not the number of hits. Hits would be a higher number. In fact, it is a higher number over in this column, almost double the numbers that we see over there, because the average person gets on there and he goes to more than one page. It's also not the number of visitors, because the same person may come back multiple times. That's what we want. But what we've been using as a gauge is the number of visits to the website and kind of tracking that through time. This is for the first part of this year. In June of this year, for the first time ever, we went over 700,000 visits in a month. I was thrilled and thankful. I don't know how it's happening, but I'll leave that with God as to what's bringing that many people there. Had over 700,000. Then the month of July was 747,000. And last month, 784,000. We've had 3 months in a row with new records being set. What that means is that more than 1,000 people an hour are accessing that website. even if just 1%, even if 1/10 of 1% were to really show interest and stay with that, that's more contacts than I probably could have generated in a few years of work that I was doing before when I was up in the upper Midwest. There's a tremendous number of opportunities that that brings out. And what happens is many of these people are studying and studying and studying before they ever get in contact with us. So when they come to a study, some of them are just about to the point of making their decisions already. And it's a matter of getting some time to sit down and talk and ask some questions and show a few things to help them come to a decision. Something else that I think is interesting here, this only shows during a 3-week period. This is to show the different places from which people accessed our website. It's not a local church website. It's not even a Brazilian website. It's a Portuguese website. And what that means is that people who speak Portuguese, wherever they are, whether they are Brazilians or Portuguese, people who have moved to other countries or pockets of the world where that language is spoken, but you can see all these red dots indicate that somebody had accessed during that 3-week period from that country. So you can see basically all of Brazil is covered. What's green there is because it's green there. That's rainforest and swampland that nobody lives there. But where in all the populated areas of the country is filled in. But you can also see a fair amount of activity from Europe, the United States, Canada, even over into Asia, Australia, Africa. There have been at least 4 baptisms in the last few years in Europe as a result of contacts through our website down in Brazil, where Brazilians who are living over there got in touch with us and we were able to put them in contact with brethren over there. But the method that we've used a lot the last 4 years especially, to some degree even before that, have been to try to offer public Bible studies in as many different parts of the country as we can. I think I've done these now in about 19 out of the 26 states in Brazil. I've not gotten to some of the more remote and less populous states, but in most of the bigger states, we've done these studies. We normally do what we refer to as study marathons. Simple concept. If you're having to rent a place to do the studies, you're having to make a trip to get there, and many times people that are coming from other places to get there, you want to get the most out of your time that you possibly can. So typically we will do studies from 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon until 9 o'clock that night, with just brief breaks and maybe an hour break for people to go out and get something to eat and come back. But we can pack in about 6 hours of studies in a 7-hour period that way. And the people that come normally will come for the first study and stay until the last study. And they will normally come and ask questions during the breaks that we have. A lot of those days, I don't even sit down during the breaks because as soon as I get done the last class before the break, somebody's coming with a question and I just end up talking with people until it's time to start the new class, the other class, an hour later. These are open forum type studies where we allow questions and answers. That becomes one of the most challenging aspects of it because we don't know who's there. So we're going to get questions that can come from all over the field with that. The studies are advertised on our website. We print up flyers and pass out. We mail out flyers. And, of course, the topics are chosen with the intent to challenge people to think, challenge people to evaluate their beliefs, trying to get them to see the need to change and to accept what the Scriptures teach. Okay, all of that statistics and methods and all that, but preaching the gospel is about people. When it all boils down to it, we want to see faces because we want to realize that real people are the ones who are responding to it. I'm not going to try to put up faces of all the ones who have been baptized in the last year. I don't have room for that, and we don't have time for that. But let me show you a little bit about some people. Henata got in touch, sent an email to me several months ago, said she wanted somebody that could help her in the town she lived in. I didn't know anybody in the town she lived in. But I knew brethren about an hour away, and I knew some other brethren about 2.5 hours away. And so I sent her contact information to 2 different couples in those other cities and asked if they could try to follow up with Henata. So they got together to study with Henata, and she brought a friend, Thais. And it wasn't very long until both Henata and Thais had obeyed the gospel. Then they said, you know, you guys have done public studies in a lot of other cities. We'd like a public study in our city so we can see who else is interested here. So they found an auditorium to rent. They put ads in the newspaper. They handed out flyers. Brethren from those other 2 cities went to help them with that part, with going out door to door handing out flyers. And when it came time for the study, a few days before the study, folks where I worship said, you know, we're getting a minibus to go up and participate in the studies on Saturday. And this meant that each one was paying his own way. They were splitting up the cost of that minibus so they could go up there to the studies. One of the women in the congregation where I worship got the idea going and started talking to people, and so they took about 15 people up in a minibus to participate in this all-day marathon of studies. And then we traveled back to one of those other cities where we got in about 1 or 1:30 in the morning and had to get up get started for a 9 o'clock Bible class the next morning, had Bible class, worship, stopped for lunch, and then went out for lunch, and then we came back for more studies, studied until about 5 or 6 o'clock that evening. Packed a whole lot in, and that was with about 360 miles of driving to make all that work between the classes and between the different things. But the result, that work up in Franca where Henate is, they just about filled that auditorium. Probably about 60 people were there from 2 o'clock Saturday afternoon until 9 o'clock Saturday night studying the scriptures. Wagner came because his wife got in touch with us through the website. She came first, then Wagner, and then after a while he baptized his 78-year-old mother, Conceição. And this story, this fellow over here is a fellow named Pedro. I want to tell you how God can overcome our blunders and use them for good. When contacts come in, we usually try to figure out where they are. And one of the ways of doing that is looking at the area code. If you can get somebody's area code, you have an idea where he lives. So I got an email from Pedro. I looked at his area code, and I sent it on to some brethren in the town that I thought he lived in from that area code. And one of those brethren started corresponding with him, answering questions, helping him on through his studies. Finally got to the point that Pedro was starting to talk about the need to be baptized. And so Tiago, who was studying with him by email, said, okay, now where exactly are you? He said, I've never asked you exactly where you live. And imagining he was going to tell him the name of the neighborhood that he was in the same town that he was in, Pedro said, I'm in Canada. The area code was not a Brazilian area code. It was a Canadian area code. So Pedro, a Brazilian, was in Canada doing an English course when he started studying our website, but that didn't need to be a problem. Tiago said, well, we're getting ready to have a weekend of special studies here. Gary Fisher's going to be coming down. He's going to do some studies in April. So Pedro bought an airline ticket and flew from Canada to Porto Alegre, Brazil. Just about got off the plane and headed for water. He was already basically prepared, so Tiago studied with him a little bit more, and it wasn't long after, and Pedro was baptized. He then stayed for those intensive studies, continued to study with the brethren, and then he decided, this is more important than that English class I was doing in Canada. I'm not going back to Canada to finish the English course. I'll just forget it. And then he decided, and you know, this is more important than the government job that I have back in my home state, halfway across the country. I need to be with Christians to grow. So I'll just quit the job and look for a job here. And so Pedro abandoned the English course, abandoned his job, and started looking for a job where he was. Hasn't had much luck. He spent pretty much all of his savings to live for about a year looking for work and studying the scriptures, and still didn't find a job in Porto Alegre. So now he's living at my house for a while looking for a job in São Paulo. But Pedro has been a tremendous encouragement to us. Every time I think about that story and how God brought all that together, I think about Acts 8, Philip and the eunuch, and how God brought everybody together. God can do those things. And as I mentioned, we do public studies in different places, new congregations that come up in different places. I could talk about that for a long, long time, but we don't have time for all of that tonight. What I want us to remember is that God is working, and I plead with you to continue your prayers for his work in Brazil, as the congregation here has continued to be very, very supportive of us in that work throughout all these years. It's not very often we get back here. In fact, I have a difficult time staying on a good schedule of even sending formal reports. I put a lot in Facebook about little things as they happen. But God is working, and I thank you for your prayers for that and for your involvement in that work. Let's hope that he will continue to open doors for us to be able to teach more people the gospel. In the study this evening, we talked about John chapter 5. I'd like to turn back there real briefly and to remember the challenge that is made to us as we recognize who Jesus is. just the last part of the text we looked at in class. In verse 21, he says, "For as the Father raises the dead and gives life to them, even so the Son gives life to whom he will." Jesus can give life because Jesus is God. Men don't give life. Angels don't give life. God gives life. And Jesus can do that because he is God. And he's willing to offer that life to those who are dead in sin. That's why he came. That's what he wants to do. He then says in verse 22, "For the Father judges no one, but has committed all judgment to the Son." Jesus will judge. Guaranteed. Not all will accept the life that he offers, but all will face the judgment that he will bring. We will be judged. And Jesus is the one, because he is God, who has that power to judge. And because he is God, because he gives life, because he judges, verse 23 says that all should honor the Son just as they honor the Father. He who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. And then over in chapter 14, Jesus used the language of service to God when he said in verse 15, "If you love me, keep my commandments." Think about that in connection to some things back in Deuteronomy, for example, that when we love God, we will obey his commandments. And then he says in verse 21, "He who has my commandments and keeps them, it is he who loves me, and he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and manifest myself to him." If you love me, you will obey me, and you will be blessed because of that. Spiritually blessed is the point here. In the Old Testament, the formula was, if you love me, you will obey me, and you will be blessed in the land. Here we are to be blessed in the spiritual land that belongs to God. But for that to happen, we must recognize Jesus for who he is. And when we recognize Jesus for who he is, as the God capable of saving, and as the Lord who has absolute authority over us, we then must submit ourselves to him. He said in Matthew 28 that he had received all authority, and so he sent the apostles out to make disciples. And to make disciples, they needed to baptize people in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. That's one part of making a disciple. But at the same time, he says, teaching them to obey all things that I've commanded you. A commitment of submission to the Lord is a fundamental part of our conversion to Jesus Christ. If you've never made that commitment, but you recognize him to be Lord, you need to make that decision. If you've done that but you've turned away, you've forgotten that he was Lord. If you've turned away from him, you've forgotten how big he is. You've forgotten that he is God. You have forgotten that he is Lord, and you need to come back to him. Remember that and renew your commitment to being obedient to him.